Charles O'Mine. This week, I interview Milt Briggs, international whistle champion and inductee into the Whistler Hall of Fame. Naturally, I started thinking about the variety of famous whistles, train whistles, steamboat whistles, famous whistling scenes in movies like Bridge Over the River Kwai and To Have and Have Not with Humphrey Bogart and Lauren Bacall. You know you don't have to act with me, Steve. You don't have to say anything, and you don't have to do anything. Oh, maybe just whistle. You know how to whistle, don't you, Steve? You just put your lips together and blow. Bogey gives a long wolf whistle. Today, though, we're talking about whistling songs. Here's Milt Briggs, a.k.a. the Blue Mockingbird. So what's the name of that piece?
That was Swallowtail Jig. And a swallowtail is a butterfly, and a jig is a dance. You could call that the butterfly dance, or as sometimes kids will say, flutterby for butterfly. I don't know why, but that's kind of a common thing. And of course they're right, because isn't that what a butterfly does? It just sort of flutters by, so that's the flutterby dance, if you will.
Now you've won the International World Championship. You've been inducted to the Hall of Fame. And I understand you won the Lillian Williams Entertainment of the Year Award. Tell me about Lillian Williams. Who was she?
Well, she was a woman that came to whistling competitions. And she was pretty elderly. She was in her 90s, and she always used to say that she was a member of the NDY Club. And we, what was that? And she'd say, not dead yet. And yeah, she was quite an entertainer. And so when she passed away, they gave an award in her name. And then later it became the Entertainer of the Year Award. And so that's what it's called now, but actually it started out as the Lillian Williams Award.
She sounds like a fun lady.
Yes, she was something else. True, yeah.
Now, did you grow up with music in your home? Did you have relatives, older relatives, and that had music playing, instrument or record-wise, singing along to the radio?
My grandmother was a violinist, but because of stresses within the family and the divorce, I lost track of my musical side of the family and didn't connect again until I went to a wedding and my aunt, Margaret Heilbrun, who was a concert mistress at one time of the Sacramento Symphony Orchestra, also a violinist like her mother. She was there, and she hadn't seen me since I was 4 or 5 years old, and we we had quite a reunion. She's going to be 100 in May, and her son, my cousin, Fritz Heilbrun, is a musician. He's a trombonist, And also Christy, another cousin, she's a pianist. So yes, I started out with a musical family. I can remember my mother playing fiddle faddle on the violin, and she was a wonderful player, actually. According to my aunt, my grandfather was instrumental in getting the Sacramento Symphony Orchestra started. But as I say, there was a pretty big gap in there between 4 years and 80-something. So I'd say about a little over an 80-year gap, I guess. So when you ask me if I come from a musical family, that's sort of I don't know quite how to reply to that. My mother remarried when I was 10, and we moved to, she married a rice farmer, and we moved to O'Banion Road out by the Sutter Wildlife Refuge. And that's where I grew up, and I learned some bird calling there, okay. The meadowlark. And that's kind of as how my whistling became to be more sophisticated. But I learned to whistle when I was 4. And I started entertaining as a whistler when I was 10. I had a teacher that realized I could whistle. And so when we would sing songs with the chorus and the glee club at school, I'd get to step out and take a solo. And it was very reinforcing. So I told people, when I grow up, I'm going to be a professional whistler.
And they smiled politely. And yeah, said, that's nice, dear.
And they laughed. And now I am one. And if I tell people that, they still laugh. So
it's not exactly in a career counselor's book, is it?
Well, no. No, it isn't.
No, and you said you learned to whistle at the age of 4. Is that just trying to figure it out on your own, or did somebody?
Yes, most whistlers, practically all whistlers, are self-taught.
Well, I could never whistle. I tried my damnedest, and all it comes out, it just sounds like gusty winds.
A lot of people say that. I don't know. I think you probably could. I could probably teach you to whistle a little bit, but you know, it's all in what do you want to do with it? When someone's interested in whistling and they ask me about it, or students, because I was the director of the International School for Whistling, was held in North Carolina in Lewisburg as part of the International Whistlers Convention, I would tell students, I'd ask students, what do you want to do with it? And that's very important, because if you want to make music with the whistle, which is what most whistlers are there for. It's not an easy thing to do, but there are things that you can do to improve your technique. But it's just like any musical instrument. You have to have a feel for the music and learn proper phrasing and good strong tone. And the most important thing in whistling is pitch. Because if you don't have good pitch with your whistling tone, then whistling becomes comical.
Now I have to ask this. I know it's a cliche question. Mayberry RFD.
Absolutely. That is the most famous whistling tune in the world. It's wonderful. Yeah. Yeah. And that happened in North Carolina. You know, the show took place there, and yeah. So, yeah, that's a very popular tune.
Because I'm just guessing that among whistlers, that's probably the equivalent to guitar players having to learn Stairway to Heaven. That you can't be a whistler and not know maybe
the RFD. Yeah, that's a good analogy. And before that, the whistler that probably attracted the most attention was Elmo Tanner. And he whistled with the Ted Weems Orchestra. And Elmo was a guitar player, and he also whistled, and he was a fabulous whistler, and he did a tune called Heartaches that went way up on the charts and sold a million copies. And then also a famous blind whistler, Fred Lowry, did Indian Love Call. He had a certain warble in his whistling style, and that sold over 1 million copies. Bing Crosby was a whistler. And of course, Ron McCrobie, the famous jazz whistler who was on the Johnny Carson show many times, they're in the Whistler's Hall of Fame. And so am I.
So how did that come down the pike? Are you nominated? Do you put your name in the hat? How does that work?
Well, it sort of works in a kind of sequential hierarchy, if you will. I started out as musician in residence as a guest after I became the international whistling champion in Carson City in 1985. And then in 1987, they had was then the National Whistlers Convention, and they invited me to come as musician in residence, which meant that I did school assemblies on whistling for the schools there, and I rented an old guitar amp, and my wife then, Beverly Kaminsky Briggs, went with me, and we'd go from school to school doing school assemblies, and I got to know that part of North Carolina pretty well around Lewisburg. And then I also was a judge, and at the time they held the competition in the courthouse in Lewisburg. And then following that, well, I also did a concert for all of the people that were associated with the National Whistlers Convention and just the local people at Green Hills Country Club. Then following that, I did some more judging. And I won the Lillian Williams Award for Entertainer of the Year. Then I became founding director of the International School for Whistlers that was held in conjunction with convention every year. As I kind of went up the ladder there, at one point they decided, you know, that they would give me the highest award that the convention gives for someone who has advanced the musical art of whistling. And so in 1998, was inducted, I guess you'd say, into the Whistlers Hall of Fame.
So what are you going to whistle for us next?
I'm going to do the Irish Washerwoman. I think about Virginia City when I think of the Irish Washerwoman. And I think of Mrs. Cowan, who was an Irish Washerwoman. She washed clothes for the miners and cooked for them. She married a man named Sandy Bowers. And the two of them joined their claims. And guess what? It turned out to be the Comstock Lode.
Oh.
And I bet she danced a real jig on that one. She invited the Queen of England to come and see her. Irish Washerwoman.
So what was your day job before you retired?
I was a public school speech therapist. In sort of an odd way, I learned to actually compose using the whistle. And I began to develop what I called the music language technique with speech handicapped children and made songs up for them to just practice their speech exercises, and I'd also work in preschools and, you know, take the whole class, you know, and we'd all get together. There'd be parents and the teachers and the aide. We'd get in a circle, and that's where we do a lot of drill and a lot of language, sentence structure, and then worked a lot on just kind of self-esteem by spotlighting the children. At that time, it was like a big deal to pretend that you were on TV, so we had sort of a fake TV screen, and the kids would get to go and stand behind that, and then we'd all sing their name, and they got a big kick out of that. But at the same time, it gave them some kind of a special feeling. And so there was just a kind of current that sort of ran through the whole group process. And I also used puppets as well. And it was hard to explain. But there was just, you know, an energy that happened there. And then I could, since we'd have parents there, I could also talk to the parents while I was actually doing this, playing and making sounds and that sort of thing. And could see all of the kids and see their mouths and, you know, whether they were participating or whether they were withdrawn and that sort of thing. And I could communicate right there with the parents and the teachers, you know, because I could see what was going on. And I worked with that quite a bit. And my wife, Beverly Kaminsky-Briggs, at that time was also a speech therapist. She passed away later in 1993. But we worked together on this music language thing, and it was pretty great. And she was a wonderful speech therapist. She really was good. She's just a wonderful, loving, kind person. Sure miss her a lot. But that sort of grew into, got me following music more and more. And I didn't learn to play guitar till I was actually middle age. I began to use it. I couldn't stay away from the music once I started to get into it. So I composed a music language songbook and talked about the techniques that we used, group therapy. Yeah, it was a great time. I enjoyed it a lot, and I know the kids benefited from it too. As a speech therapist, I worked with preschool youngsters all the way through high school, so it gave me quite a background so that later on, when I started doing school assemblies, I had somewhat of a grip on what to expect and how to deal with youngsters.
And kids absorb easier than adults, too.
Yep.
They pay attention a little bit more. They don't have all the stress the adults do about paying their mortgage and the bills and going to the doctor. And they're just out there having fun.
It's a different world that children live in now because of the technology. It's a different world that we all live in. There's a lot of pros and cons to that. What we're doing today, you know, is a plus, I think. But, you know, technology also brings its problems. And I can't imagine what it would be like to be a child. Now, I see my grandkids, and they seem to manage it pretty well, but I'm not that versed in all of the technology of the internet. I mean, I can use it some, but I don't know that I'll ever get used to it.
There's probably how-to whistling videos out there on YouTube, but if someone wanted to seriously learn how to whistle, you mentioned the school in Carolina. Are there any other ones around the country that you would recommend?
Well, there's a website called Oral Whistle. I've written things and made posts on Oral Whistle, and that's O-R-A Whistle, W-H-I-S-T-L-E, at yahoo.com, and they can join that. Yeah, so there's certain sequences that are helpful in learning to whistle. First, you have to get a tone. Once you get that tone, then you increase it. But it becomes very complex. And actually, even though the human whistle has the same range as a piccolo, the tone of the whistle can't really be duplicated. I don't even think you could do it with a sampler. A sampler being where you can sample each note with the whistle and then play it on a keyboard. I don't think that it still wouldn't give all of the kinds of nuances that you can create with the whistle and just with that particular tone. It's very human, and I just don't think that it can be imitated by an instrument or a machine. Or it could be imitated, you know, but it wouldn't have quite the same tone quality.
Almost as unique as a fingerprint insofar as the human voice.
It probably is. I never thought of it like that, but that's a very good question. It could be, yeah.
Rich Little. I remember when he was, the peak as far as voice impersonators were back in the day. And they claimed that he sounded exactly like Humphrey Bogart. And they did a voice pattern. Uh-huh. And it was close. It was, pretty close.
Yes, yes.
But it couldn't be exactly because it's not his voice.
Right.
So that's why I'm wondering if maybe whistling has the same
concept. I used to be able to tell, but it's through style and attack and tone. But I used to be able to tell as soon as I heard a whistler who it was, whether I could see them or not. I didn't need to see them. I could just tell by the way that they whistled who they were. And I could do that with, quite a few whistlers. So if I'd ever heard them whistle before, then I remembered how they whistled. And I could identify them.
So what is your whistling signature? Do you know?
I have a signature tune. It's called Blue Mockingbird. Probably... my warbling style, it's pretty fast.
Can I hear a snippet?
Isolated, it doesn't, it doesn't make a lot of sense. But, because it for me, it's what you do with it. It's not whether you just, can do it. It's what you do with it. Well, sometimes, it's like they say whistling is a very, happy kind of thing, and people whistle when they're happy, and they do, and then I just kind of let out a So just a little rip into something like that, not really thinking about it. Just come up with some kind of a corny little melody or sometimes a really good melody. My whistle's dry right now, so that wasn't very good. But
are there exercises?
But it does give you,
that you can do? Because as you say, obviously the cliche is wet your whistle. So I wondered if certain beverages that kind of help.
Yeah, there are things that you can do. But as I say, most whistlers are self-taught, and most whistlers don't accompany themselves. Very few whistlers accompany themselves. And I did that, or I began to work more on accompaniment. I never worried much about the whistling. It was always the accompaniment that I struggled with because I started very late on guitar and piano. I didn't start to play piano or keyboard until I was 40... maybe 44, 45, somewhere in there. And so I always had the pressure of trying to get my accompaniment instrument in line with my ability to whistle. And I had a teacher once, my good friend and guitar teacher, Stuart Walthall, said that I would never, ever reach the ability with an instrument that I have with my whistle, which is sort of an instrument. You can do things to strengthen your tone, but whistlers learn it by kind of listening and just whistling along with songs and tunes and that sort of thing. It's just something that is self-taught. I can write out exercises for whistlers, and there are things that you can do, but since you can already make the tone and whatever your range is, if you can increase it, by range I mean the pitch that you can whistle the notes. For instance, my whistling range is 2 octaves and a 1/6, and that takes me up to A, which is 2 notes from the end of the piano. The whistle's in the range of a piccolo. So if you have a range of, say, an octave and a half or even two octaves, there's a whole variety of tunes that you can whistle. By listening, you know, to actually other whistlers or other instruments, you can begin to shape your own instrument. And phrasing is something that's common to all musicians. Just the way that you phrase, the way that you crescendo and decrescendo, all of those things, and the way that you attack a note. You can do it very much like, you know, the same rules apply with the whistle. You can do staccato, legato, slurs. You can bend notes. All of those things are available to you. It's just a matter of being able to put them together in a way that's really workable and connecting with that inner thing that gives expression to music. And some things you can't teach. And that's not necessarily technique. I think it's easier to teach technique than it is to teach this inner substance, whatever that artistic part of you is. I don't think you can really teach that.
So speaking of different instruments, you're now going to send us out with a keyboard.
Yeah, we'll do Danny Boy since we've focused all on Irish tunes today. This is a tune apparently adapted from an old Irish air. This is a very beautiful song. A lot of whistlers love this song. Any good melody, any beautiful melody, if it's whistled well, is going to sound good and generally will be pleasing to people.
Did you catch that news piece a couple of months ago about the national anthem being whistled before the Wizards-Spurs game? Pretty cool. Do something different. Buy a classic children's game for that birthday party instead of techno gadgets.